The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a very special edition of our program, Afternoons with Mike, on this eve of Thanksgiving. This is the first time we've done anything quite like this, turning hyper-local with all of our network stations, producing a program that is purely from the that particular area. And so today on this station, WRZN in the Ocala area, the Villages, it is my privilege to have on Pastor Jeff Shanks from St. John Lutheran. He is on every Sunday morning on our station. We're so happy to have them and the congregation. Pastor Jeff, thank you for being with me today.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Now, tell me a little bit about yourself. What part of the country did you grow up in?
Well, although my family's from Kentucky, I actually grew up in Detroit, Michigan. My dad, after high school, had a choice of either becoming a coal miner or heading north to find work. And so he ended up a career law enforcement officer in the city of Detroit, which is quite challenging, as you might imagine.
Yeah, it'd be especially so in this day and age.
Yes, yes. So that's where I grew up.
So what part of Kentucky did you grow up in?
The western. Well, I didn't grow up there. My dad did.
Yeah, okay.
He's from Madisonville, Kentucky, which is in the western part.
I know exactly where. You see, I hail from Evansville, Indiana.
Originally. Oh, of course.
Yeah, just north of there, actually, on 41 and... my goodness, I know exactly. I've been to Madisonville many, many times, so that's really crazy. So he chose between being a coal miner and being a policeman, and he chose the latter.
Yeah. He had a few jobs. Actually, I think he worked as a bread delivery person in Evansville for a little while, and then kept heading. It had to do with a certain woman that he was in love with, who ended up being my mother.
And, those things always kind of fit into the equation there, don't they?
They definitely do.
That's right. What was it like being in that part of the country growing up there in Detroit? What was that like?
Well, I mean, you know, you're a kid. You don't know. You grow up where you grow up, you know. I mean, people, you know, nowadays they go, man, what was it like growing up in Detroit? Well, it was where I lived, you know. And, yeah, there was times when you got the real sense that danger was around. Certainly during the years of my teen years, I think we were setting records for the homicides in the nation, which is certainly not a record that you want to be chasing in any way, shape, or form.
That's right.
But, you know, I mean, where we grew up was... our whole neighborhood in that day and time, every police officer and every city worker had to live within the city. And so if you would know anything about Detroit, 8 Mile Road is the line of demarcation between the city and the suburbs. And you had to live within the city. So everybody that lived around us were city workers.
Hmm. So they were getting as far away from the city as they could and still be there.
Apparently, yeah, that's the way it seemed to be, yes.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know that much about Detroit. I've never actually been in the city before, although I've been in Michigan. But that area is obviously known most for all of the car manufacturing places that it was. And I know a lot of changes have gone on up there. But you're
Absolutely.
Right. You know, when you're young, you don't really know all of that. I thought I would always grow up in Evansville and stay there for my entire life, like many people did. Moving was not ever part of my mentality, but and the things do change, and obviously some things changed in your life too. Were your parents believers?
Oh yes, in fact, well, my biological mother, my mother, died when I was 3, and my dad remarried when I was 4. And for a while, they were, I mean, my father was a police officer. And again, I call my mother both my mother's mother, and she was a psychiatric nurse. But on the weekends, they were Southern gospel singers regionally, and so we spent a lot of time in church. In fact, a lot of time. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. So you're one of those guys that they used to say you kind of cut your teeth on the church pew.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
yep.
That's what? Funny. I did the same thing, although my family weren't gospel singers. I became a gospel guitar player back in the day, and mm-hmm. we traveled all around. What part of the, what would it be, the Detroit area, northern Indiana and all that they would have gone around?
Yeah, they went, a lot of Detroit area, up into Flint, basically everywhere, because in those days, a lot of people from the South moved up to Detroit, and we down into northern Indiana, parts of Ohio, sometimes down to Kentucky, but it was mostly regional.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really fun, and for people that have ever done that, there is a great love that a lot of folks still have to this day for Southern gospel music. It's really toe-tapping and wonderful.
It is. It is.
Do you happened in your life that made you have a sense of calling into ministry?
Well, I got into a Christian high school, a Lutheran high school, actually, in east side of Detroit. And I was planning on going into medicine. And so I was taking classes that kind of would prep me for college at the University of Michigan, and hopefully to get into the University of Michigan's medical school long-term. And somewhere along in the middle of my senior year, I just felt a nudge. It wasn't a St. Paul kind of moment where there's a voice thundering down from the sky and no flash of lightning that blinded me for 3 days. But I did have that sense that God was nudging me towards to become a pastor instead.
Mm. Now, when those kinds of things happen, how did you process that? Did you take that experience and talk it over with either a counselor or your pastor or your dad?
I will say, not really my father. I talked with a youth leader at the church we were attending. I talked a little bit about that, and he was very encouraging. And a couple teachers from the Lutheran High School, because I was doing things along that line, helping lead chapels and do some things. So it didn't come as a big shock to them. I will say my dad, I think, was a little more on the shock side. I think he kind of wanted to have a doctor. Mm-hmm. In the family.
Yeah,
I was going to be the first child to actually go to college and graduate. So I think he was kind of shooting for the stars. So there was kind of probably even a momentary disappointment in some way. It's hard to argue with, hey, your son wants to be a pastor. But mm-hmm. I think he kind of wanted the doctor in the family. But he came around. He came around.
Now, you mentioned things that you were already doing. Don't you find that to be the case with a lot of young men that are ultimately going to go into ministry? And it's not like an aberrant action that they're taking. They've already been doing aspects of it.
And, yeah, I think that's true. And we should, as adult types looking for those next generation church leaders, should be looking for those. Yeah, young men or young women, and looking at ways that they can serve the church.
But don't you find it to be, I think, difficult to most young people, whether whatever branch of ministry they're going into, this whole thing of calling and discerning all of that, even the experiences like you mentioned where you felt really compelled, even directly from the Lord, just getting, I guess, a handle on all that is a difficult thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and I do think it's really helpful for them to have, somebody they can kind of talk with and process that. And, I think, I've had over the years, I've done a lot of worship leading throughout the years. And, every once in a while you get somebody that can't hold a tune in a bucket, but, they feel called
yeah.
to sing the O Holy Night on Christmas Eve or something along that line. And
Nothing too difficult.
Sometimes you need the counsel around you to kind of say, hey, perhaps a different direction is your better way to go.
Yeah, right. Something that there might be some gifting to go along with the direction. That's great. I love it. You're right. I've got so many experiences of nights just like that, and you go like, "Hoo boy, okay, that was a joyful noise." I'm not sure it was much more than that, but that's really true that so many people do need and benefit from someone in their life that is going to help them through those tough decisions and speak, I think, even lovingly, if not directly, as to what is being told, because it's easy to get into something that you're not really qualified or gifted by God to do. But boy, when it is right, and obviously it's been right with you, to see that the Lord's will to be done is an exciting thing, something to be very grateful for. And that really is, after all, our theme for talking today. Now, you made it from that area, and you're in Florida. So what's the transition there?
Well, after going to getting my degree at Concordia College in Ann Arbor, I went to the seminary in Fort Wayne, and then I have served churches in First Church was in rural Arkansas, a little town, wonderful town called Lath. But it, you know, growing up in Detroit and moving to a town of 315 was some transition.
Yeah, that's a transition.
Yeah. And from there, I was in the Nashville area and the community of Hermitage outside Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
We were there for, we were in Arkansas for 4.5 years, in Tennessee for about 9 years. And then we were in Omaha, Nebraska for 5 years. And then outside Cleveland, Ohio for 8 years before coming here to Ocala.
And wow.
Been here now, very happy at Ocala for 5 years.
Well, that's wonderful. Now, what do you see for the future? Do you see that continuing, or you think you found your place where you're going to put roots down?
Well, I'm getting along in ministry and in age at the same time, so I'm hoping some roots are happening.
I mean, that's great.
You know, things are going well. I mean, there's always challenges, and I mean, COVID, everybody's been through a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these 18 months, I cannot say enough good things about St. John throughout these 18 months. They started out, the people have been incredibly generous. So I don't mean just, you know, paying my check, but I mean just taking care of our teachers and taking care of our staff and taking care of church families and people in the community. They've just been just tremendously generous. And, you know, at a time when some churches have, you know, been on the edge of folding, you know, that's not at all. We've actually been expanding ministry.
Well, tell us a little bit about the makeup of the church there.
Well, the makeup of the church is a blending of people. You know, when you get into Florida, there are some churches, I'm sure, that really kind of draw in people that grew up in Florida. It doesn't seem to be Lutherans aren't the strongest in that, I will say. We've got plenty of local people, but most of the people have grown up somewhere else and come from various backgrounds, some Lutheran, some, you know, Methodist and Presbyterian, and kind of a mixture of people with nothing, you know, hardly almost anything going on. You know, we've got a large school. Well, I consider it large. It's about 400 kids in our school.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, you've got a blending of that, although most of the kids' families, honestly, a lot of them don't have a church home. So we're kind of discipling them in the classrooms. And you know, the blending in the church still for Florida, it's funny because there's a lot of Lutheran churches and, you know, I talk to, and some of those tend to be almost all entirely made of people on Social Security. And ours is a pretty good blend of people at various ages, mm-hmm. and families and various parts.
If there were a kind of something that you think would be a moniker for the church, something they're known for there in the Ocala area, what would be the historical emphasis of that church?
Well, I really believe a lot of what St. John is known for in the Ocala community is really the school. I mean, the school started out, and the school is over 50 years old now, and it has impacted. Just yesterday, I found this a phenomenal story, especially, and I hadn't even thought about talking about this, but we were here in the afternoon cleaning up after some things in the morning, and there was all of a sudden a family out there, and my wife went out and met them, and this was a woman originally from Taiwan, who had been an exchange student here probably 33 years ago. And she was here only for a year, and her brother, who was with her, was a kindergarten student at the time. They have since went back to Taiwan, ended up immigrating to the U.S. in California, and was back, and she wanted to stop by here because she had so many fond memories of St. John, being here for that year. And I'm thinking, that is just one of those stories that will stick in my mind, you know, that just 1 year here, and it just made a deep impression on her and her brother. So they're doing something right.
They are. And, you know, schools right now, this has been, you mentioned COVID earlier. COVID really put the crimp on all of our lifestyles, but it really did change the ages of the kids that would be in your school. I mean, you know, with that, all of that, that had to be a crazy time for your church and for your school.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, we've come through it. It was a challenge. Our teachers rose to the occasion. You know, we went out of in-person instruction for a while. We got online. The teachers, you know, for the vast part of our teachers, it wasn't as though, hey, tomorrow I'll be ready to do that. It took us a couple days. We did a lot of training. We thankfully have a good IT person here who is also a part-time teacher here. And Charlie did a wonderful job training the teachers, getting the whole Google Classroom ready to go. And they did a great job. And then last school year, we started online, but quickly transitioned back into the classroom because without a doubt in my mind, I believe there's a small percentage of kids that will thrive in online school. And I'm sure people could argue with me, but what we're really seeing is they need in-person instruction.
I think that's true for us all. And, you know, we have a friend that says this, that any other religion in the world could do great in isolation. You can be sitting, he said, in an Eastern religion on a mountainside all by yourself and be in nirvana. But Christianity, not so. We need fellowship. We need each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This has really been a challenging thing, as we've said, with COVID. Now with all of where we are on this coming out, hopefully post-COVID, how is that looking for your school with this whole mask issue and all of that?
Well, I will say that up here in Ocala, it is a little looser than, like, say, if we were up in Gainesville or down in Orlando, to be honest. We have not had a significant outbreak of any sort through here, and I'm not saying schools, what they should or shouldn't do. I think every community has to figure that out, and every school board and all of those things. But the reality is we feel incredibly blessed. I'm not saying nobody has ended up with COVID, but I'm saying nobody has ended up seriously, seriously ill, and mm-hmm. that's been in both the church and the school. And it's been, you know, it's got to be a God thing, because I don't know what else to explain it as, you know. But we have tried to be cautious in what we've done. We didn't go back, you know, and have all the kids all over each other. We separated out. We spaced out. Our church services, we had green zones and red zones. You know, you could sit mm-hmm. on the green zone. Don't sit in the red zone, so we could be separated out and spread out. And you know, we shifted quickly to online, and the online has been working well. And again, it's not without hiccups, not without some speed bumps, but overall, I'm super proud of both our church and school and how they handled this response.
My guest today, Pastor Jeff Shanks from St. John's, and that is the Lutheran Church in the Ocala area. We'll be back with him in a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. A very special edition on this eve of Thanksgiving, Afternoons with Mike, my guest today from St. John's Lutheran, Pastor Jeff Shanks. It's a real treat to have you on my program today. And, you know, when we think about this now, for all of us, we've grown up with this once a year November anniversary of a holiday known as Thanksgiving. To me, one of the beautiful things about Thanksgiving is just the yearly reminder, if nothing else, of the need to be thankful, to be grateful. And that's something the Bible really does have a lot to say. What are you looking at, first of all, from a pastoral position? What is on your mind this year as you're approaching Thanksgiving?
Oh, thanks. That's a great question. What I'm really focusing in on this time is really in the message that I'm going to do tomorrow. Actually, this evening when this airs, and I want to be able to just kind of talk about moving from gratitude to attitude to habitude. We usually talk about everybody needs a attitude of gratitude, which I don't argue that point at all. I think that's great. I think it attitude that flows out of gratitude is wonderful, but habitudes are actually, what are the habits that you do? What are the things you put into motion? And I think sometimes what we do is we just kind of stop short of that, you know, and when you actually get into the habitudes, that lasts for more than a 24-hour period, or certainly more than a meal that you've prepared in between, you know, NFL games and try to gobble down so that you can be ready for the next kickoff or something. This becomes a part of our life. I was talking about that and was asking about, well, what are the habits that you follow? And one of our teens that is really involved in our church said that she, not just in November, but all year long, before she gets out of bed, before she looks at her phone, she just finds something that morning as she's waking up to thank God about. Mm. And I'm thinking, man, you know, you could be 80 years old and learn from this young lady.
Oh, that sounds like it.
Yeah, it changes your direction. It changes your perspective. One of the other things that I've done lately is I was looking, and there's studies that show that coming at gratitude, and maybe those studies aren't even grounded in, you know, in Christ or a faith kind of approach, but that the way God has hardwired us, even in our minds, that gratitude releases something within us. It rewires how we approach things. And then when you add into the faith and understanding that our response is to a God who not only made us, but rescued us, who sent us Jesus, that just, you know, ups the gratitude level that much further.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, your 3 points there really beg a lot of thought, I believe. I don't know how many of us think about the fact that attitude really does play a lot into our ability to be grateful, to have that gratitude. And it really is something that comes not only from happiness or things that happen in our lives. And I think a lot of times people relegate gratitude to happenings or things, but really to have that place in our heart, that place in our mind, that really is an attitude. It's like the set of a sail on a sailboat. It's, you know, that thing catches wind and moves it when it would never move without that sail being set. And that's kind of what an attitude is.
Absolutely. In fact, one of the definitions, you know, I did that, is talks about the orientation of the mind. So I love your analogy about a sail. Isn't that what an orientation of the mind is? It's your attitude. Otherwise, we're just waiting for things to happen for us to be grateful for.
Mm.
And we'll always have excuses. Well, I want that. That was good, but I wanted something better. You know?
Yeah.
And if that's what we're going to wait for, that's going to allow us to have an awful lot of me kind of going on in my life.
I heard a poem years ago, Pastor Jeff, that said, it's the set of the sail and not the gale that determines what path we go. And I think that is so true. And I love your gratitude, attitude, and habitude. And that is something that I'm going to be carrying with me and talking about with my kids as we gather around this year, to have an attitude of gratitude. That's a beautiful thing. What are you seeing right now as maybe some of the things that Americans right now are lacking the right attitude about or over that they should be maybe more aware of? And if they were, they'd be more grateful. What things come to your mind?
Well, I know we've gone through a hard stretch in so many different ways. Obviously, COVID's part of that. Some of our social unrest is part of that. And I think part of our struggle has been is, lo and behold, we have problems. Well, guess what? We've all got problems in our own lives. We got problems in the lives of our nation. But if we recognize the opportunities that God's given us, both as a nation and as individuals and as communities, then instead of just focusing in on the problems, we can start to change that attitude towards, well, what are the opportunities God's giving us in the midst of this? Mm-hmm. Maybe it is. It's to learn to get to know somebody that's different, that thinks different, instead of just, you know, me, and I want to be in this echo chamber, and I just want to only think the way I think. And when we start understanding that every day is a gift from the God who made us, saved us, the God who empowers us, it starts to put a different perspective that maybe God's going to give me an opportunity today to meet somebody that is different than me. But in meeting them and making that human connection, I'm going to be able to learn a little more of their story, and they're going to learn a little bit more of my story. And perhaps in those stories, we'll see that God connection that he's trying to build.
Mm-hmm. What are you seeing right now happen on the American front with the next generation, the young people of today? So many are quick to criticize our young people, and certainly there are things that aren't right, and we know that that's true in every generation. What are some of the real issues that you think our young people today are facing that really could be helped by some of these attitudes that we're discussing?
Well, I think that they face... Quite honestly, they're facing a world very different. I mean, when you and I grew up, I have no idea what your age is. I don't want to tell them what my age is.
I'm 68, so I'm probably older than
well,
you.
Well, I'm only a few years behind you, but, you know, but the reality is, you and I didn't, I mean, all right, it was the 60s when I grew up, but I mean, a lot of that, you know, I was facing that as a kid. I haven't seen these kind of issues before. Who prepared us for a pandemic?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I was thinking about that. I've got a granddaughter who was born at the beginning of the pandemic. So all she's known is wearing masks,
mm-hmm.
and being separated. And what is that doing? So I'm amazed at some of the kids that we have and some of the youth that we have around. Of course, we could pick apart, you know, we could look and we throw out terms like entitled, although, you know, most of the time when I think entitled, I think, well, sometimes it reflects from the parents making them feel like they're entitled. You know, I think so much good can be coming. I think there is a passion of kids to unite with people that are different than them and to work past differences. And I think the attitude of gratefulness is one of those difference makers, in my view. When you start building in habits that say, you know what, this life is a gift and the opportunities God gives me is a gift. And if we could see that perspective, that God has placed you at this time and in this place, at this moment, to make a difference, I think those are the things that attitudes will get made, and it'll change, and life will get a little better because love's going to get spread. God's love's going to get spread.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the beautiful things about Thanksgiving, Pastor Jeff, for me, and I think most people would agree, there's hardly another holiday in the calendar that really has even the imagery more pronounced with Thanksgiving than just about any other, of a family sitting around a table enjoying a meal together. This is a prime, if there's ever a prime meal in the year for an emphasis on family, it's going to be this Thanksgiving Day tomorrow when that happens across this country. And yet we live in a day where there's probably never been a greater attack on the family than what there is today, both from the secular news media, just in the attitudes that are out there about families, about moms and dads and their role in the kids. So tomorrow is a prime example to set, I think, a good tone. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. And I mean, I understand there's these outside forces that seem to be attacking, but sometimes we're our own worst enemy when we allow other things that come as far more important than our kids. And we'll justify it and say, hey, I'm working nonstop. We're on the road nonstop, running from this place to this place. This is all for the kids. But at some point, kids need those moments around the table.
Mm-hmm.
They need conversation with moms and dads, and maybe it's grandmas and grandpas if they're around, and aunts and uncles, and all that. That sense of family gives kids grounding. And trust me, in a school setting like ours, we can see it. We can see differences with kids that home life is just, you know, it's chaos. And with those and those that are grounded in home life, that's built around the table,
mm-hmm.
There's a difference.
There is a difference. And the things that happen that the kids not only come to that table having experienced not only just on Thanksgiving Day, but all year long, that kind of solidifies when you're sitting around that table and the parents are lovingly directing the conversation toward our need as believers, for those that are, I'm talking about now, Christians who are hearing, we need to be a thankful, grateful people. That should be an emphasis. And I am so thankful for the kinds of conversations, that memorable conversations that my family had around the table. After the meal is done, we sit around and we go around the table and we talk about what is going on in our life that we're grateful for, that we're thankful for, and that really does make a difference.
Absolutely. I know when my kids were teenagers, we have two boys who are now grown and one who has three children of his own. And when we were growing up, we were the oddity because all their friends would come over and we would invite them. We'd say, oh, well, I mean, if you're more than welcome to stay at our table, you know, come to our table and eat with us. And without a doubt, almost every single one of them always said, in some ways, that we're weird. Because we ate together.
I wasn't expecting that one.
They thought we were weird because none of them had families that did. And that's when we realized that we were an oddity.
Yeah.
We were a family who actually believed in getting, we would adjust schedules. We would figure out a way for us to sit down almost every day and have our supper together.
Ah, that's so great. That's the best kind of weird.
Yeah, I thought so.
It certainly is. And yet, you know, when our kids are older, they look back on these days. I know my own kids have told me this, and they are so thankful for those moments that might have come over to other people observing them as awkward or like, wow, you do that, you sit around and everyone talks. Yeah, and that's so weird in a day of like today, where so many families, when they're together at a restaurant, they're all looking down at their phones. It's
Absolutely.
It's almost like we've forgotten how to communicate.
You're so right. My oldest son worked for a while in the restaurant industry, and it would just drive him crazy because families would come in. You know, these beautiful families. He would serve them. You know, it wasn't like he wasn't going to serve them, but it drove him crazy that all four of them would be on devices.
Mm-hmm.
And he just wanted to rip it out of their hands and say, hey, you know, you got your mom and your dad here, or you got your sister here, or whatever. Like, talk. Because that's the way he grew up. And I think that's one of the things that I'm really happy that that's part of their experience and that they're carrying that forward.
You know, I can't emphasize enough how important what you just said, our experience. When it comes right down to it, we have an opportunity right now, and for all of us that are alive, it doesn't matter what's happened or what we didn't do or what we could have improved on. We all can change, though, what happens around that table tomorrow. We all can have something to do with today. And I recently heard a teaching about the Lord who answered Moses by saying, "Tell them I am that I am sent him." And, you know, when we think about the ever presence of the Lord, how present he is, he's always in the present. And that's what parents can be, regardless of mistakes made in the past. Tomorrow, they can be in the present and set something in motion tomorrow with their family that will be looked on in future years with thankfulness and gratefulness that that happened.
I think you're absolutely right on target.
Well, it is really fun to get to talk to people like you who, again, if what you experience and what your kids' friends determine to be weird, I think that is the greatest compliment that could ever be made. And, you know, that's the kind of weird that all the kids wish they could have in their family, because that is going to, at the end of the day, be meaningful and remembered by them all. I believe it. My guest today is Pastor Jeff Shanks. He's from St. John's Lutheran Church in the Ocala area on this very special program, heard here on both 720 AM and also in the Villages at 103.5 FM. And it is really a delight to have Pastor Jeff on with us. We'll be back in a moment to talk more with him. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. On the line with me on this very special Thanksgiving Eve program, Pastor Jeff Shanks from St. John's Lutheran in Ocala. You know, when you think back in your life, there's so many years when you get to be as old as I am. I look back and I can think of some special days that really stand out in my memory as being something that is wonderful. What, when you think of Thanksgiving, Pastor Jeff, what comes to your mind from some of your past years?
Well, mostly from my childhood, I think in terms of being with my grandparents. And we would alternate years. One year we would be with my grandparents, who also lived in the Detroit area on the west side of town. And then the next year we would be down in Kentucky in the Madisonville area that we talked about earlier, and my grandparents there. And if I had to pick between which did I enjoy better, I don't think I could. It's because both of those were just incredible memories. They're very different people, different kinds of grandparents. I had a grandfather in Michigan who never let me win, and then and a grandfather in Kentucky who never let me get a word in. So it's just, you know, very different, but, you know, both just, and both grandmothers were just phenomenal cooks who cooked with love, a lot of Southern flavors, and Thanksgiving was just about being around family. It was those times when we truly felt together.
Mm-hmm. I love those examples you're giving, and the memories that I have on Thanksgiving Day, in addition to all of the things that happen with the meal, my own dad would take us out. We'd go on a walk and go rabbit hunting on that day. And that was walking the fields to see what we could see if we weren't hunting. But those were some of the things that I think back at. And those are just wonderful things that, shockingly, I don't think any kid can even have an idea of the value of those moments, like what you're describing, going back down to Madisonville or there in Detroit. And you know, we don't have in those moments a clue as to the value that these things, these moments, these days will hold for us later in life. But boy, parents today who are hearing this can help provide that kind of a wonderful experience for their kids, can't they?
Yes, they can.
That's really important. Well, the things that's going on there in your own church, pretty exciting stuff that you guys plan for the public at St. John's. Tell us about what's going on this year.
Yeah, and this is about the result of about 2 years, to be honest, of study and research. We are launching what we're calling the Ocala Christmas Light Spectacular. and we are partnering with the Florida Horse Park there off of 475, kind of in between Ocala and then headed down towards the Villages. So I'm hoping lots of folks from the Villages feel, you know, just can't wait to get up. And what it is Florida Horse Park has a 1.8-mile roadway that leads through the center of it. Now, you have to actually enter on 475A because it's going to be one-way traffic. And along that 1.8 miles, we have over 350 light displays, not even counting the walkthrough area at the end. Sunday through Thursday, it is a drive-through event for the most part. But then on Friday and Saturday, we even have a Santa Land. But I'm going to just tell you from a Christian perspective, our reason for wanting to do this was, for one thing, Christmas is one of those things that unite us. You know, even those who don't know Jesus yet, there's something about the Christmas season, and we can kind of build a bridge from there. Everybody loves Christmas lights, and so we thought, man, we're going to put that in. But at the center of that, as you drive through this, where it ends up, and throughout the 1.8-mile drive, there's constant reminders, but there is a giant nativity lit up with a 26-foot-high manger. The star is that, and it's just a beautiful thing.
That sounds so exciting, and this is in the horse park, you said, right?
The Florida Horse Park. There's no way we could have pulled it off, you know, in town, because you just can't get that kind of stretch. But they had that ability, and they have worked with us and just done a phenomenal job.
Is there a charge for this?
There is a charge, you know. Unfortunately, we wish we could have the kind of budget where
could. Oh, yeah.
But all those light rentals and all those things, it is during the week. I will tell you, it's $20 to do the drive-through per car, not per person, but per car. So you load them up, you know, any passenger type car or SUV, it's $20. On the weekend, it is $30 because we have Santa Land. But here's the thing: we're not going to nickel and dime you when you get to the end and you go to Santa Land. For example, there is a train ride that the kids can take, and it goes out and it goes around a giant Rudolph and a Christmas tree and all of that. We're not charging for that. We're going to have Santa there on the weekend on Friday and Saturday nights. We're not charging you per every picture you take with Santa. I mean, it's just all included. And if you go to the website, which is ocalachristmas.com, you can pre-buy tickets for $25 instead of the $30.
Wonderful. And give us that web address for that.
Yes, it is Ocala Christmas. Run it together, ocalachristmas.com.
Wonderful. And then beyond that, what do you see happening in 2022? Again, praying, hoping that this is post-COVID and will continue to be that. What's happening in St. John's for 2022?
Well, I really see, again, people are coming back. Is it like it was before COVID? No. But what I've really found, and I was listening to Ed Stetzer, who is a well-known teacher, prognosticator, whatever.
I love him. Yes.
Circles,
yes.
Who said that in a way, and I hate to call it this, but COVID has become that great sorter, that those who are just kind of hanging on the edge of a church somewhere, those are the ones that have tended to kind of step aside, and we're going to have to keep trying to reach back out and bring them back in. But those who are involved have actually become, and that's what we've seen, have become even more appreciative and more committed to the mission of the church. We talk around here that our mission is to welcome everyone as we follow Christ, grow in faith, and serve with love. And we see the committed core that actually is expanding, and the people that have been coming back and actually getting involved seem to be even more committed to that mission than before.
Well, that's something that any pastor would be grateful for when they see what you're seeing. That's tremendous. When you look back, what do you think right now, if you were to have someone sitting in your office and you're counseling them, and they're discouraged over just the state of our country right now, how do you encourage them?
Well, I want to point out two things. First of all, as much as we love our country, we're ultimately called to a king greater than our country. You know, I think that's important to start with, that honestly, Jesus is King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and he's got people throughout every nation. That's what we're told. And I always look to the book of Revelation, and you get into chapter 7, and it says, I saw this vision, and there were people from every race and tribe and nation and tongue. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't love my country, but it does mean that my ultimate allegiance comes to Christ, and that in this country, then, that translates into how I look at my nation, that I want to love my nation. I see that as the place that God has placed me. He didn't place me over in, let's say, Nigeria, or he didn't place me in North Korea, which, according to statistics, is the most dangerous place in the world to be a Christian. He placed me in the United States. So how do I, as a follower of Jesus Christ, how do I love my neighbor? How do I do that which supports my country? How do I pray for my president, whatever president it is, whatever congressperson it is, whatever senator it is, whatever judge it is? How do I pray for each and every person, as Paul says? And how do I lift them up? And how do I live my life in a way that honors my nation, but at the same time always understands my ultimate allegiance is to Christ?
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. Those are some great points. And we could even add one more, whether or not those people, the judges or the president or the governors or whatever, regardless of whether they're a Republican or Democrat, we need to be praying for them.
Absolutely.
And not just pick and choose for the ones we like or the ones that are on our side party-wise.
Yeah, it doesn't mean I can't campaign for one or another, and I, you know, but ultimately, I never saw where Paul said, hey, let's just pray for the ones that agree with us.
Right.
It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
He didn't have that choice at the moment, because Caesar was not about to bow a knee to Jesus at that point. That would take a little while.
That would take a while. My guest today, Pastor Jeff Shanks, when you think back now over your own personal experience with you and your family, what's your favorite Thanksgiving food?
Well, I absolutely do love turkey. I know I'm weird in that. And maybe it's the weird thing keeping coming out.
Yeah, that's right.
Some people, I do love turkey. I love turkey. And I love turkey with dressing and gravy. That's the Holy Trinity of Thanksgiving for me.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I got to have the stuffing. And you got to have the pumpkin pie, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, these days I stay away from the pumpkin pie for the most part.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Send it my way. That's great. Well, Pastor Jeff, I can't tell you how much fun I've had having you on the program today. So grateful for you and for the wonderful people there at your church at St. John's Lutheran. And you're heard every Sunday morning here on The Shepherd. And again, our Ocala frequency, 720 AM, right, what you're listening on right now, also 103.5 FM. And friends, if you're picking up this program and you haven't heard this show on Sunday mornings yet, do definitely tune in 10:30 on Sunday mornings and listen for Pastor Jeff Shanks and the congregation from St. John's Lutheran. We are so grateful that we're able to partner with you and bring the gospel through you to our listeners on Sunday mornings. Thank you so much.
And thank you so much as well.
And friends, we hope that you have a delightful Thanksgiving dinner with your family. Make it very special, as we've discussed, for your children. Give each an opportunity to share what they are thankful for. And we can all be grateful that we have a Savior named Jesus. God bless you. Have a marvelous day. And we'll see you next time on Afternoons with Mike.